It's Friday, October 11th. You've clicked on the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. I'm Phil Picardi. Glad you've come along. Coming up, the Lynx win it all. Gopher football coach Jerry Kill steps aside, at least for now. And the controversy over a team's nickname is added to the Vikings stadium mix. Also, NDSU researchers try to tame E. coli. And we hear from a Twin Cities actor who plays a Somali pirate in the new blockbuster Captain Phillips. The Minnesota Lynx have won their second WNBA basketball championship with a three-game sweep of the Atlanta Dream. Rupa Shenoy reports while the Lynx played in Georgia, their hometown fans gathered to cheer them on.
This is the sound of a movie theater, not a sports arena. The Riverview Theater in Minneapolis was packed last night for a free viewing of the Lynx's third match in the best-of-five championship series. The all-ages crowd was tense throughout the game as the Lynx worked to widen a lead over the Atlanta Dream. Cleo Rank and two of her friends from Minneapolis's South High basketball team were sitting toward the back. The high schoolers stood with everyone else as a Lynx win finally looked like a sure thing.
It was a really exciting game to see, and it was a great turnout. It's really fun to see all these people who come support women's basketball.
The Lynx popularity skyrocketed in 2011 when they were in the finals for the first time playing against the Atlanta Dream. Minnesota swept that series in three games. Last year, the Lynx went to the finals again, but lost in four games to the Indiana Fever. Some said the players were just played out. 2 months before, Simone Augustus, Maya Moore, and Lindsay Whalen helped the U.S. win an Olympic gold medal. Still, the fans kept coming. This season, the Lynx had their biggest attendance for a single game in franchise history in late July, when more than 16,000 watched the Lynx win over Phoenix at Target Center. Going into this year's series, Lynx guard Simone Augustus told LynxBasketball.com the rematch with Atlanta would be emotional.
We have a feeling of trying to get back what we feel like we rightfully own or deserve, and they have a feeling of, you know, not again.
The Lynx's chemistry was slightly different from 2011. Team veteran Taj McWilliams-Franklin retired. There are four new players, including Janelle McCarville, who used to play with Whalen for the University of Minnesota. Maya Moore said she, Augustus, and Whalen were ready for another championship.
I think we're a little more just aware of what it's going to take, how it feels to win, how it feels to lose.
The Lynx won the first two games of the championship in Minneapolis. When the series moved to Georgia, the Dream didn't quite have the usual home team advantage. Their own Phillips Arena is being used for a production of Disney on Ice. So the game was held at the Gwinnett Center north of Atlanta. That's where Maya Moore, as a teenager, won three consecutive high school basketball state titles. Last night, she scored 23 points and was named Most Valuable Player of the series. But after the game, Moore insisted she didn't do anything alone.
The most valuable players are standing right behind me. I just can't take this myself. The way this team has battled all year together has been unbelievable.
Lynx coach Cheryl Reeves said the key to her team's success was their attitude.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that didn't believe that we were still one of the top teams in the league. You know, that was really good for us. It was really humbling. And, you know, and we played with a chip on our shoulder much of the season. And we played great. We played great.
Rupa Shenoy, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
University of Minnesota athletic officials say head coach Jerry Kill of the football team is taking some time off to treat his epilepsy. A seizure caused Kill to miss Saturday's game against Michigan, which the Gophers lost. And his extended leave comes after some fans and critics wondered whether Kill is healthy enough to lead the team. NPR's higher education reporter Alex Friedrich talked about Kill with Tom Cran last night.
Any idea how long Coach Kill is going to be away from the team?
It's not really clear. Kill himself wasn't at the press conference, but he released a statement saying he looks forward to returning soon. Now, university officials say it's essentially up to him. I mean, he can take the time he needs. The Gophers don't play anyone this weekend, so Athletic Director Norwood Teague says it's a pretty good time for him to focus on his condition. But, you know, they wouldn't say where he was getting treatment or what exactly that would be. And in the meantime, the Gophers defensive coordinator Tracy Clay is going to fill in as he has in the past.
Now, what was it about this last seizure? Is that what changed his mind, or why did he choose now to get more treatment?
Right. Well, it was apparently the fact that Saturday's game was the first one that he'd ever missed entirely. Now, he's missed parts of, I think, four prior games, including half the game against Western Illinois last month. But this one was complete. Now, he's told reporters before that he can't be missing games and still be coach. He said that much. And he said that he'll give up his job if he ever feels he can't perform. Now, university officials say this was Kill's decision, and so he's taking this seriously. Apparently, he's taken some time off before for treatment in years past, but has cut the treatment short after he started feeling better. From the information we've been given, though, it sounded like that had happened before he came to Minnesota.
How will his absence affect the team's performance on the field?
Well, Clay's acting head coach says it won't. Now, he's been on Kill's staff for something like two decades, and he says he knows Kill and feels comfortable. Now, he and their staff have their routines, he says, knows what to do when Kill is gone, and just as they did in their victory against Western Illinois. And one of the points that has been made is that Kill is a big cheerleader for the team and a big source of morale. And as head coach, sure, he'll make big calls on game day, but it's the assistant coaches who really run the game each Saturday. They know their calls, they have their drills, and they've been running practice. Now, Teague says Kill is going to stay in touch with the coaches by phone when he thinks it's necessary, but he says he wants Kill to focus on his treatment. In any case, both he and President Eric Kaler say they back Kill all the way.
Now, a big part of the job of being head coach, recruiting, doesn't that happen during the weeks the team doesn't play?
Right. Well, Clay says they're already on the road recruiting players. They're on that, and they've been open about Kill's condition. Teague, the athletic director, says he's concerned about the perception of the team at times, but is focused on Kill's health.
And what do we know about reaction from the players to this news?
Well, they know about it, apparently, and they've been texting him about it. Teague says they've got a good demeanor and they're going to play the best to please him. They're 4-2 overall, but 0-2 in the conference, and they could find the rest of the season pretty challenging with teams such as Nebraska, Indiana, and Michigan State.
All right, Alex Friedrich, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Alex and Tom Cran on All Things Considered. Construction begins on a new football home for the Vikings next month, but a group in Minneapolis says it is determined that one thing that won't make it into the new stadium is the word Redskins. They say it's time for Minnesota to take a stand against what they call a racial slur, but the NFL considers the name a hallowed tradition for the Washington, D.C. team. Tim Nelson has more.
A long simmering controversy over the name of the Washington, D.C. NFL franchise is heading towards a boil this fall. There's a bill in Congress to ban the Redskins' name, and the Oneida Nation in upstate New York launched a campaign to change the team's name last month. Even President Barack Obama offered his opinion on it last week in an interview with the Associated Press.
I've got to say, if I were the owner of the team, and I knew that there was a name of my team, even if it had a storied history that was offending a sizable group of people, I'd think about changing it.
And now some of the heat of that controversy is being felt in Minnesota. A group of Native Americans and their supporters say the construction of a new football stadium is the chance to reboot public policy and put pressure on the NFL to rethink the Washington Redskins. They're taking a novel approach. They aren't appealing directly to the NFL, the Vikings, or the Redskins. Washington has only played in the Metrodome 9 times, including the 1992 Super Bowl. Instead, opponents are asking the state board building Minnesota's new stadium to do something it can control, to ban the use of the word Redskins on publicly owned signs or public address systems one last time in November at the Metrodome and then in the new stadium. Alan Yelsey is an activist who helped make the request to the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority last week.
There are literally a score of federal, state, county, city, municipal laws in effect that all prohibit the offensive R word, just like the N word, from being used in an environment where the public assembles, being used in an environment where people are employed or work.
Yelsey compares the push to the Clean Indoor Air Act, a law aimed at curbing public smoking. It started small in Minnesota in 1975 and has since evolved into outright bans in states and even other countries. Yelsey wonders if a small policy change here could gain similar traction.
There are some inherited ways of thinking that still persist and that still deny some people the right to come into a space, a public space, in a sense, breathe the freedom of equality.
The Sports Facilities Authority didn't take any action on the request before it signed off on a new lease with the Vikings last week. Spokeswoman Jen Hathaway says the authority may have a more formal response next week. But opponents of the Redskins' name say they're going to be at the stadium in the days before November 7th when the Vikings play Washington. Richie Ploss, who's a member of the Menominee Nation in northeastern Wisconsin, told the Sports Facilities Authority he'll be part of a demonstration against the team's nickname before the game.
It's not a fist in the air type of situation. It's just education and to let you know that there are many of us, Native Americans, do not support that name at all.
For now, the NFL isn't showing any indication that the league is ready to make a change. Washington owner Dan Snyder sent a letter to fans yesterday saying he won't break with his team's 81-year tradition and that the name serves as, quote, a symbol of everything we stand for, strength, courage, pride, and respect.
Fans feel strongly about the name.
That's NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell addressing the matter at a press conference at the league's meeting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday. He asked for understanding about the team's name.
There are differing views out there, so all of us have to be respectful enough to understand that. We all want to do things to honor people and not to do anything in a negative way.
But opponents say that's what happens wherever the Redskins play.
That's Tim Nelson on the NPR News Update. Researchers at North Dakota State University say they have discovered a way to make the E. coli bacteria less dangerous to human health. As Dan Gunderson reports, the finding could improve safety in food and medical devices.
Bacteria can make people sick, but the organisms are much more dangerous when they form a social network to communicate and protect each other. That community is called a biofilm. The National Institutes of Health report that biofilms cause 60% to 80% of microbial infections. Birgit Preuss is a professor in the Veterinary and Microbiological Sciences Department at North Dakota State University. She spent years looking for ways to defeat biofilm. It's a tough challenge because together the bacteria are more potent and more difficult to kill.
They form on surfaces, they glue themselves to the surface, they glue themselves to each other, and after that they're very difficult to remove. Antibiotics don't get to them, the immune system of the human host doesn't either.
The E. coli bacteria use hair-like appendages called flagella to swim and to attach to surfaces to form biofilm. Graduate student researcher Meredith Ersfeld fed bacteria a neurotransmitter we all have in our brain. It's called phenylethylamine, or PEA. It's also sold as a health food supplement, alleged to enhance weight loss and fight depression. Ersfeld says when the E. coli bacteria eat PEA, they stop growing the flagella they need to move and to attach to surfaces and each other.
Because the gene that produces flagella is brought down immensely. And so it's not able to form that initial attachment, and that initial attachment is needed for biofilm formation to even begin.
And if the bacteria can't form biofilm, they're less dangerous and more easily controlled with antibiotics. A lot of researchers are now looking at ways to control bacteria by suppressing genes to change behavior. Prue says her lab is the first to try using PEA. She says because this approach changes the bacteria rather than killing them, it will take longer for the bacteria to adapt and become resistant. More research is needed to fully understand why this specific gene is suppressed, but researchers are already moving forward on practical uses for what they've learned. Biofilms are a big problem for medical devices. They can form on hip or knee implants, pacemakers, or catheters used in dialysis and cancer treatment. That can cause serious infections that resist antibiotic treatment. NDSU researchers will look for ways to embed PEA in those medical devices to prevent biofilm formation. Birgit Preuss says there are a lot of ideas to use this discovery to improve food safety.
Someone said, why don't you fill it in a little bottle and sell it in a store so can people use it in their own refrigerator? We just gave a seminar and someone said, why don't you put it into the package material for the beef? So there is right now a lot of ideas that different people bring in what one could do with this.
Preuss thinks a ready-to-use material could be developed in 2 or 3 years. Government approval might take much longer. Right now, the next phase of research is on hold. Preuss can't submit her next grant proposal to the National Institutes of Health because the agency is shut down.
That's Dan Gunderson in Fargo. MinSure officials say callers to its help center are waiting on hold for an average of 9 minutes. That's longer than officials originally planned. Elizabeth Stawicki reports.
MinSure said this summer callers should expect wait times of about 2 minutes and no more than five. But if you tried the call center recently, you likely heard this.
We are currently experiencing high call volumes. Your estimated wait time is currently over 5 minutes.
And then heard a lot of this. MinSure Executive Director April Todd-Momlove says MinSure is making changes to the website in hopes of easing call volumes.
Many of the callers are calling in with some password reset related questions, so we are changing some language on the website that would help reduce some of those questions.
She says MinSure expects higher call volumes in November and December as the mandate to have insurance January 1st grows closer. Elizabeth Stawicki, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Pope Francis has appointed a new auxiliary bishop for the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. Back to Tim Nelson for more.
The Vatican said in a release this morning that the Pope had named Andrew Cousins to the high-ranking administrative post in St. Paul. The announcement said Cousins has been an assistant professor at the St. Paul Seminary, where he's been since 2006. He's a Connecticut native and was ordained as a priest for the Archdiocese in 1997. The Archdiocese previously only had a single auxiliary bishop, Lee Pichet. The Vatican didn't say why it was appointing Cousins or what role Pichet may have going forward. The announcement comes as the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis and its Archbishop John Neinstead have come under fire for the handling of allegations of misconduct by priests. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Republican legislative leaders have gained some support for their claim that DFL Secretary of State Mark Ritchie overstepped his authority when a new online voter registration system began. Here's Tim Pugmire.
GOP lawmakers asked legislative auditor James Nobles to decide whether Ritchie crossed the line last month when he launched the new system without specific legislative approval. Nobles declined because House researchers already concluded that legislative implementation would have been a better approach. Nobles said they made a compelling case that Ritchie's authority is questionable.
So I frankly didn't feel the need to do my own analysis. I'm telling legislators to rely on the analysis that they already have in front of them from the nonpartisan staff.
In a written statement, Ritchie said he appreciates Noble's thoughts and comments and looks forward to further discussions. He did not respond to the authority issue. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Businessman Stuart Mills has formally launched his Republican campaign for Congress against DFLer Rick Nolan in northeastern Minnesota's 8th District. Mark Zedeklik was there.
Mills is an executive with his family's Mills Fleet Farm chain. He has never run for public office. The 41-year-old says if he's elected, he'll vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act and to cut government spending. Mills appeared at two campaign kickoffs, including one at a business in Rush City, about an hour north of St. Paul.
I'm the most least likely person to be running, but we have in our family something we call the hunting camp doctrine. And that's that when you're at hunting camp, if you complain about a problem, you get the job to fix it.
DFL Congressman Rick Nolan defeated first-term Republican Chip Kravac in 2012. Kravac has endorsed Mills. The race for Congress in the 8th District is expected to be the most hotly contested congressional battle in Minnesota next year. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Rush City.
Patrons of the Duluth Public Library will soon be able to borrow more than just books. As Dan Crocker tells us, the library is launching the state's first seed lending library.
Starting next spring, library customers can borrow heirloom seeds of tomatoes, peppers, beans, and other plants to grow in their gardens. After the growing season, they'll be asked to save a portion of seeds for themselves and return a portion to the library. Project organizers say it's the first public seed library of its kind in Minnesota. They say about 60 exist across the U.S., including one in La Crosse, Wisconsin. The goals of the library are to preserve locally adapted seed varieties and encourage eating fresh vegetables. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
Four Minneapolis men will bathe in the Hollywood spotlight as the new Tom Hanks film, Captain Phillips, opens this weekend. The quartet, all first-time film actors, play Somali pirates who board a U.S. container ship and take its skipper hostage. One of them, Barkhad Abdi, who plays the pirate leader, has even been mentioned as a possible Best Supporting Actor Oscar contender. Here's our Ewan Kerr.
Acclaimed action director Paul Greengrass ramps up the tension early in Captain Phillips as the crew of the huge container ship Maersk Alabama notices they have unwelcome company sailing down the coast of Somalia. Tom Hanks, as the title character, calls the maritime authorities on the ship-to-shore radio to relate what is happening.
I'm relaying your transmission now, but chances are it's just fishermen.
Then I hear the fish.
The freighter manages to evade one attack, but the pirates come back, this time with a faster boat and a willingness to use their AK-47. In a hair-raising scene, four Somalis risk their lives to swing a boarding ladder over the side of the massive ship. They run up to the wheelhouse and shoot the lock off the door. And that's when Captain Phillips meets Musi, the pirate captain.
Look at me.
Sure.
Look at me.
Sure.
I'm the captain now.
It's a chilling scene which hinges on the cold intensity blazing out of Musi's eyes. However, Barkat Abdi, who plays the pirate captain, almost didn't get a chance to try out. He was one of more than 700 people at an open audition at the Brian Coyle Center in Minneapolis in November 2011. Abdi says he soon realized it was unlikely the number he'd received from the talent scouts would ever come up. He was about to leave when he saw a guy chatting with one of the talent scouts.
I was talking to them, and when she told him to go in, she looked at me and she said, go in too.
Abdi won the role of Musi, and three other young men he knew, Mahat Ali, Faisal Ahmed, and Barkat Abdirahman, also won roles. They were excited to be working with Tom Hanks, but they did not get to meet him until months later when they were shooting the intense confrontation in the wheelhouse. Director Paul Greengrass wanted to maintain the distance and tension between the combatants. Abdi says he was nervous going in, but Greengrass calmed him down.
Paul came to me and he said, you have to own the scene, you have to take control. So I just, you know, became the character as much as I can, and that's when the line came out, I'm the captain now.
Which Abdi ad-libbed. The life and death struggle for control rumbles under the whole of Captain Phillips. As the story progresses, the pirates realize they will have to deal with the might of the U.S. Navy. It's at that point that Abdi allowed the more human side of Musi to come through, showing the desperation which causes a man in an impoverished, lawless country to become a pirate.
He's almost given up, but he can't. Everything is against him, but he just don't want to let go. He don't want to show that he gave up because he just can't.
Abdi says there is great excitement over the film in the Somali community in Minneapolis, but he admits to a certain amount of wariness. The community has dealt with a lot of bad news in recent years, and he doesn't want to add to the discomfort with the story of the Somali pirates.
Everybody knows the story of what happened, and, you know, they understand how desperate these guys are, and, you know, what they're doing is wrong.
But he says he and his friends know a lot of people in Minneapolis, and they hope they will appreciate the film. The critics certainly do. Variety named Abdi as an Oscar frontrunner, and his performance has attracted effusive praise from many other quarters. Abdi shrugs it off.
You know, it was important for me to do the best I can, but Oscar never came to my mind, honestly.
And he says, once things get into his head, they often don't work out, so he's just not thinking about it.
That's Ewan Kerr on the NPR News Update. For what it's worth, NPR's film critics said the movie was great. He said it was so suspenseful he kept checking his watch to see how much longer he would need to endure the tension. I'm Phil Picardi. Thanks for listening to the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. See you next week.